Welcome to the Political Cesspool, known worldwide as the South's foremost populist radio program. And here to guide you through the murky waters of the political cesspool is your host, James Edwards.
September 10th, as I broadcast to you live this evening from Washington, D.C. Yes, I'm phoned in to the network tonight from my beautiful hotel room here in downtown D.C., just a stone's throw away from the Capitol and the White House and everything else that's going on. We talked about it a little bit during the first hour. You know how incredible this weekend has been. Now we are going to talk about it comprehensively with some of the people who made it happen during this, our second hour. James Edwards here with you, folks. Thanks so much for joining me as I join you, again, from Washington and the National Policy Institute's incredibly amazing conference. Richard Spencer is our first guest this hour. We're going to try to have one guest per segment this hour. Richard, of course, is the executive director of the National Policy Institute, in addition to being the founding editor of AlternativeRight.com. And Richard is the ringmaster of this whole event. He is the one who put it together, and coming from a man who has organized a conference or two himself, I have been just blown away by what Richard has done. Richard, welcome back to the show. I know it's crazy tonight. It's hectic. People are everywhere, and everybody wants to talk to you. But did this conference, Richard, meet, exceed, or fall short of your initial expectations?
It exceeded my expectations. I think everyone in our movement was quite worried after the Ameren debacle that these kinds of things were going to become impossible. And I certainly had many sleepless nights thinking about what could happen in the sense of finding, developing backup plans, plans A, B, C, and D, and various things like that. And essentially, I think we created a usable, workable model for dissidents in this country.
Well, listen, and that cannot be understated. And we did not just hold an intellectual, highbrow, professional conference. We did it in Washington, D.C. at two of the most prestigious and posh venues in the district, the National Press Club, and then, of course, the Ronald Reagan building. Talk about
Beginning of the conference, with Jared Taylor and Ameren, the free market would not let us speak. We essentially had cowardly hotel operators who canceled on him at, because a politician might have called them or some ridiculous Antifa leftist called them or something like that. And I, in some ways, have new respect for socialist boondoggles like the Ronald Reagan Center. It's a massive government facility. But I think this proves, essentially, that if we're going to do conferences in the future, we have to really take advantage of the First Amendment. Using public facilities is really the way to go. And as you were saying, using fine public facilities like the Press Club with the Ronald Reagan Building, I think it's also a way for us to interact with people who would not otherwise attend these kinds of conferences.
Well, it certainly, to say the least, reflects well upon us to be able. Of course, anyone could have their conferences at these locations, but it certainly reflects well on our message that we are presenting it in such a polished manner. Talk about again, Richard, and I mentioned this just in the previous question. Again, the significance of having it at the National Press Club, because I know that was something that you and I both thought was very, very important.
Well, sure. The National Press Club hosts people from Al Gore to a lot of bad people.
Well, you look at that wall of fame there, and now me, you, and Jared are going to get our pictures up there soon, I'm sure. But Ashley Judd, any number of dignitaries and heads of state, athletes, actors, everybody.
Oh, yeah, everyone is up there. From George Bush to Al Gore and onward, it's just major heads of state. So, and it's just a way for us to say that our message, we're going to be public about our message because we have nothing to hide. With our message. Our message is natural, it's realistic, and all of these things. And so we're not going to hide away having private conferences or not telling people about things like that. I think the better strategy is to just go right out and do it. And I think they're going to respect us more.
Yeah, and then doing it from Washington, D.C., again, you just can't over-embellish the allure of that. And then, of course, you know, Richard, getting down to the nuts and bolts of it all, I know you planned this thing from start to finish. Not only did it come off, it came off without a hitch. The speakers were great. The caliber of the people in the crowd was equally impressive. And as I talked with you, I thought that each of the speakers complimented one another. I've been to a lot of conferences, and I know you have too.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think I'm being swept away in the momentum of this one just because it's so fresh on my mind, and, you know, we're an hour or two removed from the conclusion of it. This was truly one for the books as far as I'm concerned.
Well, you know, Alex Curtis really hit one out of the park. And it's funny, Alex is obviously a partner of mine and a good friend as well, but he's often a soft-spoken fellow. I assume you've had him on your program.
Yeah, absolutely. He is, as my audience will remember, the author of Mister, a Renaissance Man.
Yes. Yeah, oh yeah, he's a Renaissance man in terms of music and drawing and painting. Well, he became some fire-throwing Roman senator or something when he was up there. He was speaking, you know, above the body of Caesar. It was a truly great oration. I hope anyone doesn't take this insulting, but it was really shocking. I didn't know he had that in him.
So,
a lot of people, obviously, Sam Dixon gives a wonderful speech, and I think also just the kind of both seriousness, but also radical quality of what we were talking about, what Alex was talking about. You know, with Sam Dixon, we were really talking about things, and I don't want to sound like this is pessimistic or doom and gloom, but things like the end of the United States of America and what we want afterward. Really big question. That's a very provocative question.
Well, we talked about all
these
things.
We were discussing things like this. Yeah.
We talked about all these things. We presented the case clearly. And, you know, Richard, it was just a good weekend. We tried to paint the picture with our words on this verbal canvas, if you will. I just don't know, even with the best of our abilities, if we're going to be able to really impress upon the people who were not here exactly what they missed. But thankfully, NPI TV is going to make these speeches and the press conference yesterday available online soon, right?
Oh, yeah. We'll have the press conference up soon. I mean, I would say within 24 hours we'll have something up. And we're actually going to give all that stuff away for free on YouTube. The conference itself, we probably do want to sell that, but we're going to make that available at a very inexpensive price. It won't be like a $39 DVD. It'll be more under 10, I would assume. We, you know, because basically MPI has a public mission. We're in this to educate people, and we obviously need to not burn through all our capital, but we really want to bring our message to everyone. Because, you know, to reiterate, our message is one that probably is labeled as extreme or evil or something like Nazi, whatever. But it's actually something that is quite grounded in reality, realistic. It's something that naturally...
Yeah, we set the terms of our ideas today rather than the false assessment that's always given by our detractors. Well, Richard, I know you've got a busy night, my friend. We're coming up on a commercial break. Enjoy your victory lap, and I'll see you, I'm sure, down in the lobby a little bit later.
When the truth is found to be... Welcome back. To get on the political cesspool, call us on James's Dime, toll-free, at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
It's a rapid-fire hour. This hour, ladies and gentlemen, we're going from one segment to the next, one guest to the next, and they are all superstars. So I hope everyone's buckled up tight and holding on for what promises to be a wild ride here in the political cesspool. James Edwards back with you from Washington, D.C. We go to another one of the legends that was in the crowd today, my good friend and yours, the editor of American Renaissance Magazine, Mr. Jared Taylor. Jared, how are you?
Yes, sir.
Still basking in the glow, I guess.
Well, actually, we're walking back to the hotel, but I'm happy to talk to you and your listeners.
Well, it's great to have you again. And see, this is the marvel of modern technology, ladies and gentlemen. Here I am in my hotel room in Washington, you know, doing the show, linked up with the studio back home. And Jared's walking down a busy Washington street on his cell phone, and we're making it all happen for you. Jared, of course, you and I shared the stage together at the National Press Club yesterday, and then again today at what I thought, and I hope I'm not being overly exuberant. I guess the people who weren't here, maybe they could think I'm exaggerating this thing, the NPI conference. I thought it was absolutely phenomenal. Jared, what was your take on the weekend's festivities here in Washington?
Oh, it has been just splendid, and it's always a pleasure and honor to share a podium with you, James. And I think we've had an excellent turnout, an excellent meeting, top-rate speeches by you and by others. No, it's been a complete success, I would say.
Yeah, and I mentioned this with Richard, and I'd like to get your I'd like for you to convey your opinions to the listening audience tonight, those who couldn't be with us. The caliber of those in attendance, and I don't want to sound repetitive, but I'm talking about intelligent, professional. I mean, they're going somewhere with their lives. They're clean cut, squared away, all American men, some older than others, but, you know, it was multi-generational, but they all had something to give. They all had talents, and, you know, when you surround yourself with people like that, if only for a few hours in a ballroom, it reinvigorates the spirit. I mean, am I on the right track with that, Jared?
Oh, absolutely. As a fellow who had come to a number of American Renaissance conferences, which are rather similar to this NPI conference, he said to me, he walked in at one of the conferences, and he says, Jared, it's so great to be among the living again. And that is the feeling. We are among the living. And as you say, everybody is solid, squared away. I think that the liberals and the goofies that come up with these crazy stereotypes about us would get a real education to attend a conference like this and see the caliber of people who are prepared to stand up for whites and their civilization.
You know, and it truly is that. You know, I always get a kick when you share that anecdote from the Amarin conference. You even went so far as today as to say, well, why can't we live amongst the living rather than just visit them every now and then when we have these conferences? Well, that's, of course, what we were here to do this weekend, to try to lay out a plan, to talk about the options and opportunities for us to battle these foes in the court of public opinion, and then for us to reclaim America's destiny you know, in some way, shape, or form. But yes, you know, we talk about the detractors, the people who have never met us, Jared, who have never sat with us, who have never, you know, taken the time to get to know us, those who so grossly mischaracterize our positions and label us as all of these evil things, which, of course, we're not. You know, if they had come today, they would have seen the kind of people who really makes America a great place for everyone. And, you know, we're talking about people who are successful throughout, you know, the business spectrum. I mean, you just could not find a more talented group of people. I know it sounds like a broken record, but really incredible. Really,
yes,
incredible.
It would be very hard to do. One of the people who was trying to put on some kind of counter demonstration, he actually conceded as much when he said, "You know, if you want to see just how respectable these," and he called us Nazis, how respectable these Nazis look, come on out to our demonstration. They realized that we are by no means this caricature of snaggletooth folks who can't speak English properly with swastikas chiseled into their foreheads. No. These are solid, squared away people who care about the future of their people.
You know, and even, you know, obviously yesterday was a standing room only crowd at the press club. It was standing room only today, for that matter, although, you know, it was a little more harder to get in, a little more formal. You had to go through the metal detectors and all that. The press club was more open, I guess. And but my goodness, I mean, even if there had been protesters, they would have never found us in the Reagan building as sprawling as that place was. But even the black gentleman yesterday, who obviously wasn't on our side, who asked a couple of questions in the press conference, I mean, you know, surely it must have, at least on some level, though he would never admit it, to have heard, you know, if anybody, once they are able to watch the press conference that we conducted yesterday, you know, there's no way that anyone with any ounce of honesty, any amount of integrity in the fiber of their bones could really say that we are this caricature. And I think even he couldn't muster up more than just a very meek and mild mannered question of opposition, because, you know, I think we defused that.
Well, I believe that the National Press Club posts on its website the videos of every event that take place there. I'm not certain about this, but that is my understanding, that they sort of make a public record of every event that takes place. And if people go to the National Press Club website, they can experience this press conference entirely for themselves.
Well, that's interesting, Richard. Jared, I did not know that. And, I would like to just reiterate and repeat what you just said. Yeah, folks, if you can find the National Press Club's website here in Washington, D.C., you may be able to watch that press conference tonight if for some reason it didn't get posted or it's not working for you. I know Richard and the National Policy Institute are going to make those available to you. They're going to put them up on YouTube. And as soon as they're up there, of course, we'll post them on our website and elsewhere. So you'll definitely see that soon. And then I think Richard said for a nominal fee, you can get the entire conference that took place today. Obviously, the press conference yesterday and the conference today were two separate things. But, Jared, I guess we've been talking about it in so many words. We only have a couple of minutes left with you. What would you say, if you had to summarize it, was accomplished? What was the biggest accomplishment that we can take from this as we head back to our different ports of call?
I think what is important to remember at a conference of this kind, like an American Renaissance conference, is the importance of meeting face-to-face. It's all very well and good to be warriors behind the Internet, sitting at your keyboard, talking to people by Internet. Nothing replaces face-to-face contact, the camaraderie, the exchanges of views, really meeting people and gripping their hands. There's absolutely nothing like that. And I think that's the message that we need to take away from this. Seeing things on videos, talking to people over email, there's nothing like face-to-face contact.
No, just the fellowship and the bonds of brotherhood. I was talking to so many people today, and I know you were too, Jared, people who appreciate our work. The firm handshakes that I got, the look in their eye as they, you know, said they listened to the show. And I know you got it every bit as much as I did. Those who, and this was a common theme that kept coming up. You know, it's like I've known you forever. You know, it's my first time to meet you. I've only met you once or twice before.
Yeah,
you really feel that familial bond, you know, amongst people. And, of course, I see you, and we're able to talk through the radio program and by other means a little more often than some of the other people have access to one another. But, you really do feel that when you walk in here. If it's something you haven't experienced before, ladies and gentlemen, the next time a conference like this presents itself, you've got to take advantage of the opportunity, because it really almost surpasses, you know, articulation. We got that time and time again, and I felt it, and I know, Jared, that you did too. Great speakers today: Richard Spencer, yourself, Keith Preston, Byron Roth, Alex Kurtigick, who continues to get praise on the show this evening, our friend Tomislav Sunich, Sam Dixon, and then the people in the crowd were equally impressive, if not more. Great, great weekend. And Jared, thanks for making yourself available for a few minutes tonight. Folks, be sure to visit and support Jared's work at amren.com. And Jared, I'll see you shortly.
It's been my pleasure. Great to talk to you, Jared.
You too. Jared Taylor, everybody, right here in Washington with me. Stay tuned. We'll be back.
To get on the show and express your opinion in the political cesspool, call us toll-free at 1-866-986-6397. Big
girls don't cry. All right, everybody, welcome back to the Political Cesspool radio program. I'm your host, James Edwards. You've already heard from Richard Spencer and Jared Taylor this hour. I want to hear from you, ladies and gentlemen, particularly if you are here in Washington tonight and you're listening to the show. You're listening to it on a laptop. I don't guess we have an affiliate here in the district, but if you're listening to us by any way, shape, or form, and you went to the conference today, I want you to call in. I want you to call in right now, 1-866-986-NEWS. Again, that's 1-866-986-6397. If you didn't go to the conference, call in anyway. Perhaps you have an observation. Perhaps you were watching it today on the live stream that was being provided by Richard Spencer and our friends at the National Policy Institute. It was streaming live online. If you watched it or if you didn't get to see it at all and you're hearing about it for the first time, perhaps you have a question that we haven't covered about the conference and its significance, I'd love to take your call. Were you here today? Did you miss it? Did you watch it online? Do you want to know more about it? We're talking about the National Policy Institute's conference this hour. And, again, folks, I would like to hear from you. My number. News. And while I'm waiting for you to call in, we'll go to our next guest, who is, I tell you, he's always the closer. He's the closer at any meeting he speaks at. He's the closer tonight in terms of our featured guest. A man who provided liquid gold, you said last week, when he appeared during the third hour to be interviewed by my co-host Bill Rowland, as I was on the road last week as well, Sam Dixon. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Well, hi. It's nice to be back. I don't think I'm liquid gold or liquid anything. But
hey,
I'm
only
anyway.
Relaying the assessment of the audience, Sam.
Well, the first will be last and the last will be first.
That's right. Well, nevertheless, you're about to be promoted to co-host. This is 2 weeks in a row, so I don't know.
Well, I know. People are so sick of this, they're going to be throwing stones at you. They only get
I doubt
through to
that.
You. On the radio, they have a hard time throwing the stones.
Yeah, I was talking with a guy today that I guess you met for the first time, and he said, I was looking around, I couldn't believe it. I was sitting at it, if people weren't here today, the ballroom was set up in round tables, not just theater style, and the guy said, I can't believe it. I was looking to my left, and I was looking to my right, and I was at a table sitting with James Edwards and Sam Dixon and Jared Taylor all at one table. And I don't know, Sam, people carry a pretty high opinion of you. He marveled.
Well, I appreciate that, but we all put on our pants one leg at a time in the morning. We all have our shortcomings and our virtues.
That's true enough. Always humble.
I have a lot to be humble about. It's easy to be humble when you have a lot to be humble about.
That's what I always say when you tell me that I'm too humble and too modest. But nevertheless, I'll tell you.
The thing that is so amazing to me, I've said before, this doesn't apply to our political agenda to discuss tonight, but I just can't imagine how some old bald thing like you managed to propagandize that good-looking Hollywood gorgeous wife of yours to marry her. You should be the supreme propagandist of the movement.
I tell you, I would like to be. Well, that might be the only thing I have going for me, because God knows I don't have money. maybe I can talk my way into things, but I'm certainly for the better for that, as we all are. Unfortunately, my wife wasn't able to come to this particular conference. This is actually one of the first ones she's missed in a long, long time. She normally goes with me anywhere I go. But this time she was visiting her sister in Texas, and I was in Washington, and so there's always the next conference. But anyway, Sam, the one thing we can't diminish was the absolute total victory of this weekend's festivities. It went off without a hitch. It went off without a hitch in Washington at the National Press Club in the Ronald Reagan Building to boot. What did you take away from the activities of yesterday and today?
Well, I'm optimistic. There are a lot of really splendid young people there, really impressive young people, which is very encouraging. We see that these policies that we warned about for so many decades are now beginning, actually, that the shoe is beginning to pinch, and it's harder and harder for the lie machine to con young white people into believing all of their lies. And that's a very encouraging thing. I thought the quality of the talks, I didn't think there was a single one that was not good to excellent, except mine, which is not. The talks were very good quality. There were interesting and new things being said. Very good ideas were brought up. The conference itself was splendidly organized, and as you say, was a great victory. There are minor cosmetic things that you pick up as you go along. There could have been change, but it was nice to get it in a place where they could not close us down. You probably told them that the head of the One People's Project, what's his name, Lamont?
Yes. Well, yeah.
He attended the press conference. I sat next to him. I didn't know who he was, and I wish I had known. I would have chatted him up more. But anyway, I'm sure he was discomfited that he was not able to shut things down. The way it is, it's shocking to think someone like that can actually prevent serious meetings, including talks by real scholars, to take place in America. But, The other thing is that somebody said, I've thought it many times, that somebody said that this is an argument against free enterprise and libertarianism, that the only places that we can meet now are government facilities. The businessmen won't let us meet. They're all cowed by the Marxists and working hand in glove with them. And only a government facility offers freedom.
Yeah, isn't that ironic? But I'll tell you, the way this weekend goes, I'm not begrudging it. These were pretty nice government facilities, and I think something special about the fact that we came to Washington. We showed mettle, we showed leadership and determination, presented our platform, I think, very, very articulately, and we did it with confidence. We did it, a block away from the White House and from all of these, totalitarian organizations that are in Washington that do seek to limit freedom of speech by traditional Americans. But, yeah, I want to get back to what you said a second ago, Sam, about the caliber. And, hey, this has been a recurring theme now for 2 hours as I've been on the show, the caliber of the people there. I saw, of course, I had to leave a little bit earlier while things were still kind of wrapping up to get here in time to do the show this evening. As I left, you were holding court with several of the students that were in the crowd. And as I said,
yes,
a multi-generational crowd, people who have been successful in all walks of life, but there are also many up-and-coming leaders. I didn't get a chance to talk with them as much as you did, Sam, but I'm sure they were impressive.
Well, they were very, very good guys. They were very squared-away guys. They're off to serious careers. One of them's off to in the police department and this kind of thing. They were intelligent. They were in control of themselves. They bore themselves well. They were courteous. They were well-mannered. They were manly, physically fit. Clean cut and intelligent, well-read people.
And it's so interesting how you described them, because that's exactly how I was describing the attendees. And, you had no idea what I had said before you called in, but there is something to be said for being physically and mentally fit. I mean, and how that reflects upon you and your people, and why we think it's significant to the point that we pointed out that these people were clean cut, they were well dressed, they combed their hair, they looked like they look like Americans from the bygone days. And I thought, the speakers certainly complimented one another.
Alex Kurtajic stole my material.
I heard about that.
He must be into the black arts. He says he's interested in occultism, and I think he's in olden times he would have been burned at the stake for somehow stealing my material telepathically.
Sam Dixon, the KG lawyer from Atlanta, I looked at him at one point, and he had notes sprawled across this table like he was opening up an office. And he had to reorganize his speech because Alex had covered many of his topics. But I tell you, Alex is another name that keeps coming up tonight as I talk with people who were here. What a great presentation, and what an outside-the-box talk he gave.
Real, real, real neat what he had to say.
Well, I think Jared's talk was titled "How We Can Get There From Here." Where do we go from here, Sam?
Well, like I said, when you have a problem, there isn't something to do. There's something to know, and we first have to know, and then we do something. I think what we did today was something. You need to, Jean-Marie Le Pen. I met with him one time in Paris, and he said that you have to start a journey with one step. I mean, you have to start where you are. And so many people have they have impossible desires that there'll be some gigantic movement with a quarter of a million people and stadiums filled with people and people being elected to the U.S. Senate and all this sort of thing. You don't go from crawling to becoming the Olympic star runner. You've got to go from where you are, and we are crawling and on our baby steps, and whatever we do has to be feasible. It has to be feasible in terms of the people to staff it and the financial support. People ask, why isn't someone doing something? Well, let's take an example.
Sam, hold right there. I know I promised I wouldn't keep you longer than 10 minutes, but I want you to finish this thought because I know where you're going with this and this is important. If you could stay with us just for this commercial break, we'll wrap it up on the flip side.
We'll Jump in the political cesspool with James and the gang. Call us tonight at 1-866-986-6397. And here's the host of the political cesspool, James Edwards.
All right, everybody, believe it or not, even though there's a little over an hour left in the show this evening, this will be my final segment with you. We're going to transfer things back over to the studio in Memphis after we wrap up with Sam Dixon here. Bill Rowland, my co-host, will be in studio, and he will be wrapping up the third hour with you as I go back down and join some of the other conferees in the hotel lounge. But first, Sam, you were making a great concluding point there when we ran out of time.
When people ask, why isn't somebody doing something? Well, there are people doing something. James Edwards is doing something. And when people ask themselves, why isn't someone doing something, remember people like James Edwards and this National Policy Institute and other things, and write a check. It's only a check for $20. Nothing's going to happen if you don't lend don't put your shoulder to the wheel and get going. And just having a meeting like this and the ideas that came out and the networking that's done is a great step forward.
Well, it was, and there was one thing that you said that I thought was quite profound, and I think it's something that we should reiterate and something that should be shared with everyone, and including those who weren't here. You said that just by attending today, people became a little bit more noble. What did you mean by that?
Well, I didn't quite mean that. What I said was that we are European Zionists. We are Zionists of our people, just as the Jews say, and we are told have a right to their own country. We have the same right. And I think meetings like this today are things that are similar to the Basel Conference in the 1890s when Theodor Herzl and the Zionists made their plans for the Jews to have their own state. And we, you know, the people who are there are like the people attending that first Zionist conference. We are in the process of thinking things through and in meetings like this and others around the country as we try to find a program that will work of the creation of a homeland for our people, a way for our people to survive in their own racial form, with their own culture and their own religion. We are like the founders of Zionism, and in a sense, by being there, you noble yourself. It's like in Shakespeare's play Henry V, where the king tells the English before the battle of the French that every man who fights here nobles his condition, gentles his condition, makes himself a nobleman by fighting for England. Participating in this kind of thing takes you out of the mass of the living dead and brings you into the small group of people who have a plan and a program and who are thinking about the welfare and destiny of our own people.
Sam Dixon, thanks for coming back on the program tonight for a brief moment to share your assessment.
Well, thanks, James Edwards and Bill Rowland and all the people that work for them. You know, there are lots of people who say they will die for this cause, but you're among the very few who actually work for it.
Well, Sam, I tip my hat to you because we do, and certainly you do as well, and I know you've got places to be and people to see. A lot of fans of yours down there, and I'll let you go greet them. We don't want to keep you from the party. It's a great night of celebration here in Washington.
Yes, the tenderfoot needs to go have his glass of sarsaparilla, like in the old Western. You're too young to remember that, but the tenderfoot always walked into the bar and ordered a glass of sarsaparilla.
That's right. Well, go have at it, my friend, and I'll join you down there soon.
All right, great.
Sam Dixon. Well, again, folks, you can't say enough about what was done, what was seen, what was accomplished here this weekend. If I had another 3 hours of the broadcast tonight, I could never encapsulate it all. Of course, my speech from the National Press Club, which took place yesterday, will be made available hopefully as soon as tomorrow, if not Monday, on the National Policy Institute's website. It will then be promptly posted to YouTube, where I'll grab it and post it on thepoliticalcesspool.org, and from there it'll go everywhere, as it always does. So if you missed the press conference today, you will have it soon, so just stay tuned to the Political Cesspool. It's been my pleasure to bring to you tonight just a couple of the people who were here making this event possible: Jared Taylor, Sam Dixon, and, of course, Richard Spencer, who was the event organizer working with the National Policy Institute. Since my speech from the press club yesterday will be made available online, I'm not going to share with you everything. It was basically a 30-minute condensed version of racism schmacism. My book, my topic was the R word in the age of Obama, and I think we did a pretty good job. I very much look forward to you watching that when it becomes available and you sharing with me via email or on the blog your critique, your praise, your criticism, whatever, but I'm just happy that you'll be able to watch it, and watch it you will. Today, my topic was a little bit different. I was part of a panel with Jared Taylor, and we were talking, the question for the panel was, is Arizona the answer? And since that part of the conference won't be made available so quickly to you online, I'll just share with you briefly my answer to that. I said, of course, Arizona could be the answer, legislatively speaking, if the elected officials in that state are intent on carrying out the measures of SB 1070, which the people quite rightly demanded so that their border would be better secured. And of course, after Arizona, we saw a great groundswell, a half a dozen, if not more, other states, from Utah to Georgia, and places in between, proposing and passing other laws very similar to that in Arizona. The problem that we have, why Arizona may not be the answer, is the federal courts. Already in Arizona, some key aspects, key elements of SB 1070, the immigration bill, have been overturned by the federal courts. And we've seen this time and time again since they founded the blueprint in 1954. They figured out they could bypass the state legislatures. They could bypass even the federal government if they needed to, although the courts and the government normally see eye to eye. But they could certainly bypass the will of the voting public by ruling from the bench, by legislating with the stroke of a pen, a black-robed tyrant, either in the Supreme Court or some of the circuit courts. And how many times have we seen it? We've seen it countless times on any number of issues, whether it's, you know, so-called homosexual marriage, immigration measures, even affirmative action was beaten in Michigan. You know, the voters voted to overturn affirmative action policies in Michigan, and only to have that overturned by a federal court. So, you know, if it weren't for the federal judiciary, America would not look much different today than the America we knew and loved in 1954. And that is something that I think is pretty incredible. But this immigration issue is an incredibly vital problem. It must be solved. You can't have a first world nation comprised of a third world population, as I said on one of my appearances on CNN. I mean, America means something to me. America to me is more than a flop house or a dumping ground for the worst of some of these third world countries. You know, people always say, people who disagree with me, you know, they can't accept my opinion that it's coming from a good place. I don't hate anybody. I wish only the very best for minorities and other ethnic groups. I don't want to lord over them. I don't want to oppress them. I don't want to exploit them. I want them to succeed. I want them to thrive, and I want them to be contributing members of humanity. But I do love my family a little bit more than I love anyone else. I love my family, and I love my extended family, which would be those people who share, you know, our unique cultural heritage, that share our heroes and traditions, you know, these traditions of European Americans. I don't want to trade down. I don't want to make anybody else accept my way of life, but this is the thing. We ought to be able to have our own homeland without being inundated with all of this multiculturalism and this cultural Marxism. I mean, I don't want to go and reform Africa or any of these African nations into, you know, a European model. Let them do with their nations as they want, but certainly we should be entitled to that right as well. And I don't think that's hatred. I think that's something that's natural and healthy, as we've said so many times. Every group in the world, Jewish groups, black groups, Hispanic groups, now even homosexual groups, and even there's even advocacy organizations there to advance the interests of obscure species of animals and plants. But yet, if you say you want to advocate for, you know, the dispossessed traditional stock of America, you know, the European American stock, you know, you're evil. Well, I don't buy that. I'm no more evil than the people who quite rightly advocate for their own self-interest. But whites should be able to have interests as well that are unique to their own kind, and that not be offensive to anyone. Now, we just want a level playing field. I want America to look like the nation that my ancestors gave me, that I inherited, and I want to leave it to my children, and I want it to maintain its consistency. And I just don't think that there's anything wrong with that. The problem that we have is that a lot of people share our opinions. In fact, I think the majority of Red State Americans still fundamentally agree with me. They are just scared to death, paralyzed in fear that they would be called a racist, as we saw in London with these great London riots. You know, diversity is London's greatest strength. You know, diversity is burning London to the ground. But they would rather it be burned down than be called a racist, because they would be a racist. They would be called a racist, at least, if they said, you know, hey, you know, this immigration thing isn't working for us. Folks, we got to take a break. James Edwards here in Washington, D.C. Bill Rowland standing by in Memphis to take over for the third and final hour. You're really going to enjoy what Bill has in store for you. Stay tuned. We'll be back. And it's been...